It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 514. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have three voicemails for tonight. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show, and also on Facebook, we have the page Mike Nation Net. We have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows, the audio, the show notes. Great resource for everything Mike Tech Show. I have, again, a jam-packed show tonight. I want to talk about one big story from in the trenches, that was a DNS problem. I want to cover the three voicemails, and then I have a very interesting real-world problem. We'll call it a case study that a listener sent me asking for recommendations and a solution. And I'm going to cover all the areas of this because I think it's very typical of what you could be asked to do and quote on and possibly perform with one of your clients. Or maybe it's your business or a small business or someone you know. There's lots to learn just from this one email. And then we'll do a time check, see where we're at. And I have some other things to cover if we have enough time. Want to thank Instant House Call for sponsoring the Mike Tech Show. Instant House Call is on-demand remote support and unattended remote access, and it's all in a single tool. You can remotely access your customer's PC or Mac instantly with no pre-installed software. Install unattended remote access to perform maintenance on your schedule. Start providing remote support for your customers today with Instant House Call. Click on the link on my website and download the free trial. And make sure when you're filling out that info to use the promo code MikeTechShow for your free 15-day trial. Let me start things off with the phone call I received Sunday morning from one of my clients. And this is the president of a small company. He said, I'm not getting any email. When I send an email from my alternate account, it comes back permanently failed. So they have a small business server 2008 and an Exchange server that I manage. The first thing I did was remote it into the server. Matter of fact, there's unattended Instant House Call running on the server. I logged in and started looking at the event logs, looking at email. The server was running perfectly. Internet working great. Exchange server working good. The information store mounted. Everything looked great. So why can't they receive email? And I was like, boy, I wonder if anything happened to the DNS or what possibly changed. I went to mxtoolbox.com and I typed in their domain name and I got nothing. I was like, geez, that's odd. How can I get nothing? So I went to viewdns.info. Said, well, let's pull up what is being currently read for their DNS. Nothing. Like the domain does not even exist, gone, their DNS. So now I look at the whois to see all of the registered information, and I find that the domain didn't expire. As a matter of fact, it's got a few more months before it would expire. Why would the domain go missing? I took a look at the registration information for the domain, and I noticed the technical content was their phone provider. We're going to throw a couple companies under the bus tonight here. I believe they were originally Core.com, which was then purchased by ATX, which was then purchased by Broadview. So I contacted Broadview, got to the technical support on Sunday. They were no help, no help at all. They said there's, you know, nothing they can do. I said, but you own the you manage their DNS. You're in control of their DNS. What happened? They couldn't explain anything. So to make a long story short, I talked to the owner. I said, you're going to have to contact the tech support of these two companies, and you're going to have to assert that you're the owner, and you're going to have to be very forceful and escalate this to someone that's on, you know, that's in, that can help from a customer service or technical standpoint. Monday morning, I was on site because Comcast was actually out ready to install their new internet, but there was no way I would make that cut over from their current T1 line to Comcast internet, not during this crisis where they're not getting any email. No one can go to their website. After 2 days of fighting with a company that they pay money for their initial, for their phone services that manages the DNS, this was the explanation Wednesday morning when their DNS was reinstated and reestablished. They said that January ICANN, which is the internet, you know, the main holder of all domains for registrations, ICANN instituted a policy that if they could not verify the email address on the registry, they would suspend a DNS. And they claimed that ICANN did not notify them of their suspension, which they were supposed to do. And therefore, Core.com did not contact Broadview. And it was just a series of miscommunications. Now, how can that be? How can they just shut off the DNS without notification? Somebody's not coming clean with exactly what happened here. What I am going to do now, how do we go forward in preventing this? One, we got to be in control of the DNS. And it's lesson one here. When you bring on a new client, and I've said this, and I don't know why I didn't do this. This client I've had for 6 months, but we've had nothing ever to do with DNS. One of the first things you have to do is make sure you have access for all changes for the DNS and the name servers. Make sure that wherever their domain is registered, you have a login and a password, and you can see it. You can see the information, and you can make the change. One of the things you have to be careful, just because you have access does not mean you can still make changes. Your name servers could be owned by someone else. I see this a lot, where a website developer will take ownership of the name servers, yet they still think that they have full access to DNS, and they do not. Make sure you have control of the DNS. So we're going to transfer the domain name over to GoDaddy. I'm going to have them open up a GoDaddy account, move the domain there, and make sure that we are in control. And that's the bottom line. And then if you're in control, you can make sure that all of the registration information is correct. The owner, make sure you, who owns the domain, make sure that admin email contact is a valid email and correct. the technical contact, make sure that's correct. This has to be done and has to be looked at, or you can fall into the same trap where now you have your days without your email and there's nothing you can do about it. A valuable lesson here that I wanted to share, so hopefully it doesn't happen to you or a client. And take a look, all your clients, can you access their DNS information and make sure they have control? And if they don't, do it now before there's a crisis or an emergency. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go through all of my retainer clients and look into my files and making sure that I have access to all of their DNS. And anyone that doesn't, I'm putting that at the top of my list for things to do so we can transfer the domain to their control. So that was the beginning of this week. Let's take a moment and play some voicemails. This first one is really a promo and very appropriate tonight because I'm going to be talking about servers, a server podcast. Give a listen here.
Hey, Mike from the Mike Tech Show. This is Jack from Jack's Tech Corner. I was calling in just in regards to show number 508. You had a listener mention something about wanting to start a server-based show. I've also seen that niche that a while ago that we needed some filler or something to cover that area of servers, networks, and everything. So I started a podcast, and it's called TipsFromTheServerRoom.com. That's TipsFromTheServerRoom.com. And currently I'm getting ready to record show 50. I do produce these shows on Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Still looking for a live place to kind of hold the shows, but I do record them religiously on Tuesday nights. This show is also a member of the Tech Podcast Network. So hopefully you'll be able to get this out there to everybody so they know that it is available to them. Once again, that's TipsFromTheServerRoom.com. And we do already have a couple of listeners from your show already listening to the show because I received some emails that mentioned Mike Smith. So I thought that was pretty cool. All right, Mike, thanks for doing a great job with your podcast, and hopefully you'll put this out there so some folks can come over and listen to TipsFromTheServerRoom.com. Take care. Thanks, and I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Jack, thanks for letting me know that. Here's what I'm going to do. Not only did I just play and let everybody know about your podcast, I'm going to download a bunch of your podcasts and have your podcast accompany me on my flight to Arizona. I'm going to check it out, and I think you are fulfilling a need for servers. I can't wait to listen. Thank you for letting me know of its availability. And that is tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Can't wait to check it out. Here is a tip on a piece of software you might want to look into that might help you out.
Hello there, Mike. This is Thomas Dunstan from the UK. And I actually wanted to voice call you to recommend a new piece of software that I don't think has been mentioned before. The software is called Fences, and it's made by the company Stardock. Stardock was the company that gave us the Start 8, Windows 8 start menu. And Fences is basically a way of organizing your desktop so you can put different icons into different categories. You basically drag a box out on the desktop and name it, and then you can drag icons into it whichever way you want, give the category a name. And it's just a really easy way of organizing your desktop. And I think this software would be particularly good in a business environment where they have lots of documents on the desktop, lots of programs. It would be good to sort all those out onto the desktop and make it look, you know, nice. And it would probably add a bit of productivity as well, because the user would be able to work more easily because they wouldn't spend time looking for the icons on the desktop. You can get it at www.stardock.com/products/fences. You can try it free for 30 days on their website. And the actual full license costs $9.99, which is extremely cheap for this bit of software. And that's a lifetime license, so you know when you buy it, it's never going to get expired or anything like that. And if you want to go more extreme, you can get a piece of software called Object Desktop, which is basically the same as Fences, but it comes with optional subscriptions for Start 8, Modern Mix, Decor 8, Deckscapes, Window Blinds, and Object Desktop Manager, and many more apps that Stardock create, and that's $49.99. I really like the show, and thank you for bringing it to us, and I hope to hear more. And I do hope my advice has been useful to at least someone. And yeah, as I said, try out Fences, and it's a great product, so thanks very much.
Thanks for putting me onto that. I've heard the term, but I didn't realize what it really was. I bought Start 8 a while ago when it first came out, and Stardocs would always send advertising blurbs and mention Windows Blinds and Fences, but I never investigated. There's a short video, if you go to Stardocs' website for Fences, very short video, take a look, and they demonstrate how Fences works. I sent the link to Fences after hearing this voicemail and sent it to a couple clients that I know will make immediate use of it because their desktop is just a mess. You've seen it. You've seen the person out there where the desktop is just incredibly, how do they know where anything is there? I don't get it. I've sat it clients' desktops and I've looked at it and I've looked up at my client. How do you find anything? I guess, you know, the individual, they know that it's their own personal organized chaos, so they can find it. But when I sit there, I can't find a thing. And then if you got hundreds of icons on your desktop and it blends in with the background picture where you can't make heads or tails of any of the icons, I don't get it. Well, if you know someone like that, this is the answer. And for $9.99, great investment. So check out Fences. That's a great tip. Thank you for taking the time and sending that voicemail. Thank you very much. We always talk about the NK2. That is the autocomplete for Outlook, pre-Outlook 2010. So this is 2007, 2003. There's a file that's .nk2 that holds all of the autocomplete information. So this is another tip.
Yeah, Mike, this is Brad Warsh. I'm listening to show 507. When you're talking about transferring what used to be the NK2 file, if you use the transfer wizard that comes with Windows 7, because the NK2 file, it has no difference where you're hosting the email. If you use the transfer wizard, it automatically transfers and puts the NK2 file in the right place as long as you're using going from Windows 7 to Windows 7. If you're going from XP to Windows 7, there's a utility that Microsoft puts out to transfer the NK2 file into the right location. But it seems to me that if you're just use that wizard and transfer only their settings, to me it seems like it should work. And the NK2 file, for whatever it is, should already be there if we're just changing the hosting of the email. I could be wrong, but to me, I know transferring it would work because I do it. And if they're just changing the hosting, you should be able to transfer just the settings. Anyways, let me know if I'm wrong. Thanks. Bye.
I just don't embrace the transfer utility. I don't know why. I think I've tried it once, and I really should embrace the transfer utility more, but since I use FABS auto backup so much, I don't have to worry, and that's my main go-to for doing any kind of transfer. Now, when we're talking about the NK2 file, something that he left out, if you're just changing the service where the profile name does not change, then he's correct. You don't have to do anything. But if you change the profile name, then you got to go find that NK2 file and you got to rename it and copy it to the name of the profile .nk2. That is the key. So you could use the transfer utility. You can use FABS auto backup will grab the NK2 file, but something that I've often mentioned is the NK2 Edit program from NerSoft. That's the ultimate utility because it will copy and back up that NK2 or the file that is associated with Outlook 2010, Outlook 2013. I'm going to add this from the chat. So we got to be careful here. MB Systems Inc. says the following. None of the Microsoft transfer wizards have ever brought over the NK2 file. Brad, here's what I'm thinking. You've used the wizard. Maybe because your profile name didn't change, that's why you had the illusion that that worked with the transfer wizard. So be careful. You know, there's only one way to guarantee that you have it, and that is to just Google where the NK2 file is located, go to the directory and back it up and manually copy that file to a safe place. And then you can always rename it and put it back to the location that you need based on the version of Outlook. Nothing can replace that manual method. This is one of those little things that you don't want to take a chance on, because I can't tell you how important that is. Every client that I've ever ran into that relies on email, they have hundreds and hundreds of autocompletes. And if you make any change to their email system, they want those autocompletes to be there. And if they're not, they're going to be very upset. And I've seen it. Just manually copy the file. And that's one way. I want to read this email from Dante. And then I'm going to take the time to answer his entire situation here. It's a server upgrade quest. Hi, Mike. I have a new client that is in need of an upgrade of their server. Currently running Server 2008 standard with Exchange 2007. They are running out of space and the current server doesn't have redundancy or RAID controllers. They have 33 users and I'm looking to migrate them over to hosted Exchange and upgrade the server to another with more space and RAID 5 or 10. Excellent. That's the way you should be approaching this problem. Now, he goes on, I'm sure there's more information that might be needed. The current server is being used for Small Business Server 2008 operating system. Well, that's different than Server 2008 standard. So now he has Small Business Server 2008, File Server Architecture Firm, Exchange, SQL Server 2008, Construction Management Software with an SQL database, WSUS Update Service, AVG Antivirus Server, and Backup Exec. Question, are you a fan of the built-in Microsoft migration tools? Do you use it regularly? No, I am not a fan, and I don't use them. I'm going to get back to that. Do you suggest using the migration tool when installing a new server, or do you create the Active Directory users from scratch? Remember, currently, there's 33 users. I was thinking of going with Server 2012. What are your thoughts? Well, here's how we want to approach this. I agree with your migration to hosted Exchange, and I highly recommend that you do that first. Migrate your client's email to hosted Exchange. I strongly recommend Sherweb. That's Sherweb.com. They are an excellent, excellent Exchange hosted service. Get them all migrated. Now you don't have to deal with the Exchange movement to the new server. Go on to Dell's website. Take a look at a nice Dell tower, or if they have rack mounts, I don't know the server location situation. Doesn't sound like it's a really big area, so they probably just have a tower. Take a look at a RAID 10 scenario with multiple drives and Windows Server 2012 standard, not Essentials. Stay away from essentials. You're going to need your SQL. You're going to be able to have your WSUS that you want to be able to install. So I would quote out a nice new Dell server, have them purchase that, get that set up. Here's the tough decision. Any of the migrations that I've had to do to a new server, there has not been many accounts. As a matter of fact, there was only 20 when we used the Microsoft migration tool, Winston Wolf and I, going from 2003 SBS to 2008, that was a pain. We would have been better off and saved a lot of time had we just done it manually. And I have found that since then, any of my new server migrations, I've just recreated the accounts from scratch. You can use RoboCopy to copy all of the files and the existing permissions. So you're going to have to get a dump, like using a utility dump ACL or something to get all of the directories and the permissions, because that's going to be the hardest thing to rebuild. Creating 33 accounts is a piece of cake. That's not that hard. It's getting all of the permissions and the groups. How complicated is their permission structure? Do they have a lot of groups that need to be migrated? Do they have lots of different layers of permissions for files? If they do, well, you might want to consider doing the migration, the Microsoft migration tool. I'd like others to weigh in on this who have done server migrations. Do you use the server migration tool? Now, if you told me there were a couple hundred users, well, I'm going to look into the migration tool, or I'm going to look into scripts to be able to help me migrate from the one domain structure to the other. Remember, when you do this, you're going to run into new profiles at each workstation that you're going to have to deal with. So you're going to have to use a utility like Reprofiler to help you manage the user profile once you migrate to the new server. I recommend RAID 10 with at least a Dell server. You could build your own, and I know a lot of people build their own, that build their servers. I like to have my client have a 3 or 5 year same business day, 4 hour response from Dell or HP or IBM. Make sure they invest in the hardware and they have the appropriate maintenance contract. You're going to migrate the exchange to a hosted solution, so now you don't have to worry about that. Your biggest trouble is going to be the permissions going to the new system and your user profiles. They're your big challenges with this migration. I hope that this helps and the time that I spend on it helps. I'm not familiar with this construction management software that requires SQL, so look into that, do your due diligence, and contact the technical support for that software to see how the setup is, and that does that software, is it supported under Server 2012? So make sure that you look into that, and that's with any custom software or software that you're not familiar with that you inherit with your client on a legacy server. You've got to contact that company and make sure that you are compatible with the new server that you're thinking of going to. Now, there's one final thing, how you're backing this up. I hate backup exec. I came from the corporate world. All my engineers hated backup exec. I hated backup exec. It was usually the devil you know, so that was the one we used because it was better than all the others, but that doesn't mean it was good. It's just that it was the least bad. I guess, how am I saying this? All the backup solutions were horrible, and I guess we could live with backup exec. Do yourself a favor and during this migration look into buying Shadow Protect for the server. You will never regret it. And while you're at it, for your remote access and supporting this server and their workstations, you got 33 workstations and you got a server, you want to get them tied into a support and retainer contract, and then you're going to contact Instant House Call and put the unattended agent on the 33 workstations in the server. So now you have complete remote access to every workstation and the server. You're going to have the best backup with the Shadow Protect. You're going to have SureWeb for your hosted exchange services, which is perfect for all of your exchange. And now all you got to do is go through the migration. Make sure you have 3 years of the pro support for the servers, for the Dell, that is at least same day or at the very least next business day. But with servers, I like same day. I don't agree with next business day, because a server to me is mission critical for the operation of the business. It's why I love the chat. MB Systems Inc. says you can add the new server and promote it to a domain controller, let Active Directory replicate, and then you'll have 7 days to demote the SBS server, but you won't have to add the profiles manually. You know, that's a great solution. You can add that system to the Active Directory environment you have, and that's right, you have 7 days to demote the SBS server. So take a look at that. That's going to save you all of your accounts and all of the headaches for the profiles. So now all you got to do is robocopy all of the files from the one from server A to server B, where you're using the appropriate command lines to preserve the permissions. There you go. You don't even have to recreate the groups or anything. I didn't think of that. Thank MB Systems Inc. in the chat room for that great option for you for the migration. Very, very good. That's going to save you a lot of time. I think we've outlined where you're going to head and put you in a position to have a successful migration for your client. And that's why I wanted to take the time to go over this, because there's a lot of pieces to this that everybody can learn from. You might not have a client that's going to be soup to nuts everything that this one email comprises of, but there are elements in here that you could take away with the solutions that I've recommended, that you want to put your client into a position of success with all of these different options during this migration. And I think that's what we've accomplished here. So, Dante, thanks for the email. I want to know, you got to follow up with me and let me know how you made out with this project and what pieces did you use of the recommendations that you heard tonight. That is it. The next time you'll be hearing from me is from Arizona. While I'm with Carrie, I'll be getting there this Saturday. And then, matter of fact, I'm staying with Carrie Saturday night. And then Sunday, I'm heading over to the hotel with Carrie and meeting up with a lot of listeners on a kind of pre-meetup, and meeting with Corey from Instant House Call. I get to meet Lisa from Call That Girl. We've spoken, but we've never met in person, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to chatting with Bryce, who's going to be Skyping in on Monday during the meetup, which is 4 p.m. Eastern time. That's the meetup. And like I said, I'm going to do our best to have Ustream active, but there's no guarantee. But remember, Carrie is recording this. And the show is a Tech Vets show. It's not a Mike Tech show. It's going to be Tech Vets on Monday. And then also look for a possible another recorded podcast from the show floor, from the Instant House Call booth on Tuesday. There's a couple opportunities, and by following me on Twitter and Facebook, you'll know if we're going live and when we're going live. But at the very least, there will be audio and video that's being recorded that will be posted up at tech-vets.com, and I'll make sure that it's also linked at my website at miketechshow.com. So I want to thank everybody for your support. Looking forward to meeting those that are going to be out there in Arizona at the CompTIA ChannelCon convention this week. I'm excited about that. I will be back Wednesday night, and God willing, there'll be a show next Thursday, same time, same channel. Take care, everyone. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.